Right, she's in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair, making her monthly appearance with us on Brad and Dan, and that is the Commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection, Michelle Siegel. Commissioner, good morning.
Good morning. Good to see you guys again.
Good morning. And you didn't have trouble getting in here yet.
Not yet. No, we'll see how I do getting out.
Say, well, what about the department? Everything is the Department of Consumer Protection and Home Improvement, and it's that season, even though it's not weather-wise.
Right. So notwithstanding the weather, warmer days are, I think, coming up, hopefully. So this is a time when people start thinking of all the home improvement projects they want to get done and may start looking, getting their list of projects, thinking about hiring someone. And so we always around this time of year as we kind of approach spring, like to remind people of some things to do before you hire someone to do some home improvement work for you.
So I'm sure there's a checklist. What's on that checklist?
So a number of things. I mean, the most important thing in big picture is just be sure to do your research. This is your house is your probably biggest investment. So it's really important to understand who you're hiring to do work on that. So one thing, so at the Department of Consumer Protection, we register home improvement contractors. So one thing you want to do is make sure the person that you're thinking of hiring is in fact registered with us. So that's really important. But you'll also want to do some research, maybe look them up online, see if there's a lot of complaints with them. You can give us a call as well, look at reviews. You'll want to get some references. And really important when you do references, so let's say you're going to have your whole kitchen remodeled. Don't talk to a person who maybe just had a new deck put on or windows replaced. You want to be sure you're getting references for people who had the scope of work that you're thinking of and that this contractor was able to successfully do that. So those are a number of things. And then we can talk about sort of the contract itself, and you really want to understand that.
You know, I always wanted to ask you, how sure are we, and are there quite a few of these builders, workers, whatever you call them, that don't have the contracts that you have from your customers?
There's probably some out there that aren't using the contracts. A big part of what we do, aside from just registering contracts, this is an area where we see there ends up being a lot of problems. We get a lot of complaints from consumers, and we think a lot of it, sometimes it is just a contractor who's acting badly, but sometimes there's just a lot of miscommunication up front. Maybe the contractor doesn't understand the rules. So we really want to educate the businesses because we think the majority do want to be compliant, are trying to do a good job. Sometimes they don't understand how to price things and get themselves into a problem. Sometimes they don't know the rules. So we actually last year put out a big kind of handbook out there. It's on our website for the businesses themselves to understand this is what needs to be in there. It's good for consumers to look at too, so you know what your contract with your business should look like. But some things, that it should be really detailed as to what they're doing for you. It shouldn't simply be remodeling a kitchen. You know, if you're going to have new tiles put in, there needs to be some agreement on kind of what that's going to cost and what that's going to look like. There should definitely be a start date and an end date. So you want to make sure you understand the contract and what's written matches up with what you envision for that work.
You know, Commissioner, let's talk about licenses for just a moment. From a contractor perspective, what licenses are contractors or license is a contractor supposed to have?
So there's a variety of things. And one thing, and it causes a lot of confusion. So we, in some instances, we will register a person. And that's really, we have your name, your address, you have paid a fee, and you are now registered. And so with home improvement contractors, it's just a registration. There's no test you need to take to be registered. So important to understand that difference. Now, by comparison, let's say you're having a kitchen or a bathroom redone, you may need a plumber. Now, that person, or you may need an electrician, those people do need a license. And so they need to have gone through a lot of training. They need to have passed a test. And so it's important to sort of understand what's the work you're getting done and then what is the skill set that's needed. If you're just having kind of routine home improvement work done that doesn't require a special skill set, you probably just need a registered home improvement contractor. If you're doing something requiring some plumbing, some electrical work, you're going to want somebody with that credential.
So the home improvement contractor, let's say, who lives in Massachusetts and crosses the border, it doesn't have to be that many miles in, or it could be 50 miles in, and they cross the border to do work in Connecticut. Must they register with the state of Connecticut?
They should be registered, yes. So if you're going to be doing home improvement work in Connecticut, you should be registered in Connecticut, regardless of where you may have your kind of business headquartered.
So that should happen then?
Right, and it's important for consumers. So we have, it's a little complicated, but we have a guarantee fund. So part of the registration fee that home improvement contractors pay goes into a fund. So let's say things go wrong despite your best efforts. You have a dispute with your contractor. Maybe you go to small claims court, get a judgment, but now the contractor doesn't have the money to pay you back. You can come to DCP with that judgment, and we, if you've been using a registered contractor, we would then make that payment to you out of this guarantee fund, and then it would be on us to try to get reimbursement from the contractor.
But you would make it.
It's important you need to have some sort of judgment. So we don't just upon a complaint give money out of the guarantee fund. There needs to be some sort of finding that you in fact are correct in your dispute with the contractor. But yes.
So
up to $15,000, just so people understand.
How much?
Oh, okay.
$15,000 for home improvement.
Talking with Michelle Siegel. She is the commissioner of the Connecticut Department of Consumer Protection, our monthly guest here on Brad and Dan. And Commissioner, when someone then initially talks to a home contractor, what's the first question they should ask to see some kind of a registration or license?
Yeah, definitely ask for the registration number, and they should have that readily available to give you. And then you're going to want to go on our system. You can go to elicense.ct.gov, put in that number, make sure it's active. So that's the first thing. If you'll want to ask them for references, and again, for work they've done, projects they've done that is similar to what you have in mind. So those are the first two things, and then you'll obviously, if you're starting to feel comfortable with the person, you've done your research, you definitely need to get all those details and fully understand, you know, what else do they have in their pipeline. You may have this idea you're finishing your project by the beginning of summer, and they're thinking they're not even starting.
I was just thinking, what would be the next identification of a scam?
So that's a really great question. So one thing, first, you always need to be a little suspicious when you didn't initiate the contact with the person. So if somebody all of a sudden knocks on your door, calls you up out of the blue, and offers to do home improvement work, right then and there, you know this is not somebody you were reaching out to. They're reaching out to you. So that's the thing. Other things to kind of keep in mind is they may start telling you about a problem you didn't even realize you had. So they may say, hey, I was working on your neighbor's roof, and while I was there, I looked over. You've got a real problem with your shingles. The next rainstorm, it's going to flood your house. You're going to have mold. They're going to scare you. They're going to tell you you've got a problem that you never even realized you had, that you need to act quickly. And so there's going to be that pressure. So when somebody's approaching you, pressuring you to act quickly because either they've got this great price, you know, maybe they were doing a paving job nearby, and hey, lo and behold, they've got some extra and they can do a cheap job for you. But either something really bad's going to happen, or you're going to miss out on a good deal if you don't act quickly. That's another sign. They make you pay up front with cash or some other way where you can't get the money back. That's another huge red flag. You really want, when you're doing this work, not only to have vetted the person, you want to set up a payment plan. We kind of recommend generally a third, a third, a third, so that payments match up with the progress of work. You give them all their money before they do anything. You're kind of in a bind if they walk
in a
off
big time
the job, right?
And to go back to what you said before, and this is so important, Commissioner, is ask to see if they're registered with the state. Otherwise, you as a homeowner, God forbid there is some kind of a judgment, will not be able to take advantage of the fund that is available at the Department of Consumer Protection, correct?
Correct. So you want it for that. Also, it's a good sign if somebody's registered. It's sort of telling you they at least have some understanding of the law and are trying to be compliant. Now, that doesn't mean nothing will go wrong, but it at least means they're kind of aware that there are these rules around their industry.
So if a consumer gets scammed, what can they do?
So one thing, you know, so there's the difference. Sometimes people have legitimate disputes with their contractor. If you think it's a little bit more, it's a legitimate contractor and you guys are in disagreement, we encourage you to try to work it out with them as a first step and see if you can come to some sort of agreement. But if that's not going to work, maybe you were scammed. They came up, they kind of pressured you, you gave them money, and now they're gone. You can file a complaint with us. It's at dcp.complaints@ct.gov. If you really think somebody basically stole money from you, certainly letting the local police know as well. And if it's somebody driving around town, possibly cheating all your neighbors, you definitely want to let law enforcement know so they can also help prevent other people from being victimized.
Have you been able in the past to cooperate with the folks and get them to give to?
You mean contractors?
Yeah.
Certainly. Sometimes, you know, when you're dealing with a legitimate business, and it's often, whether it's home improvement contractors or any industry, often businesses generally want to keep their customers happy. And so there are instances where we sort of work through some informal mediation and can hopefully get people to a place where they're comfortable. So it's certainly a possibility.
That's
but that's why it's really important to at least feel like you're working with someone. They're registered, they're legitimate, and they're not going to run out of town. That's much harder.
Of the home improvement complaints that DCP receives, which would you say, or maybe name a couple, that are the most prevalent?
I think probably one of the ones that's we get a lot of is sort of disputes over the quality of the workmanship. And those are the trickiest ones for us. So mm-hmm. when the consumer was expecting the project to look one way, the contractor felt it was going to look another way, and then you have a contract that's vague. And those are really difficult ones for us to deal with. And
because it's so subjective?
Right. Sometimes if it's, you know, sometimes you can look at a house and clearly it was not done correctly or clearly they didn't finish the job. But sometimes it is not so obvious and there is some legitimate dispute over it. Or maybe the contractor said, you know, for flooring to bubble that way, not totally abnormal. I did offer to come back and try to fix it, but the consumer wouldn't let me back in the house. So you get sometimes these situations, and of course the consumer is like, well, I did let them in. They made a mess of this. I'm not going to trust this guy to fix it. So
true.
So you get these situations in some instances, and that's why the educating consumers and educating the business is a huge part of what we do, and we don't want to just kind of register people and then say good luck to everybody. And so thank you for having me on. It's really important to get this information out there.
Does DCP, when there's a dispute at times, serve in an arbitrary role, or is that left to someone else?
We will try to, we call it informal mediation. So we will try to work out with the businesses and consumers, but you know, ultimately, if no agreement can be reached, we encourage consumers.
But
there
is an informal mediation process then.
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, we would take your complaint. We would reach out to the business and sort of say, we received this complaint. Tell us your side of the story. And sometimes through that process, businesses will want to make things right.
I would think in this day and age that, and I'm glad that you addressed us on the on somebody, you know, doing something he or she shouldn't be doing. But you must get more and more of that these days.
We get, you know, it gets more and more complicated.
Yeah.
And certainly now with internet and email, there's just so many more ways to reach into people's lives and to kind of try to trick them or scare them into making a rash decision. So it's definitely a challenge, and we're trying to be out there as much as possible to encourage people to take a deep breath, do some research, try not to be rushed into a decision.
Well, you mentioned scams. DRS announcing this scam the other day about how people are online saying you better pay up to the state of Connecticut on these internet purchases, and the state would never notify you online.
Right. I mean, that's the example of what they're doing. They're going to scare you that the tax department is coming after you, that you're and most people out there are trying to pay their fair share, trying to pay their taxes, and to suddenly get that is really scary, and there is a sense of, oh my God, I got to fix this right away.
You know, you do a great job coming in. You help us a lot. Really help us a lot.
But there's still a purpose for snail mail, and that's how you'll get notified, right?
Yeah. As I understand it, Right, that generally if the tax department is not going to call to threaten to arrest you, they're not going to demand that you use a prepaid card for your taxes. So there's some things like that that are red flags.
Terrific.
Well, I'm glad that
Dan
speaks to, are glad to have you in
Absolutely.
Here once a month.
Great. I appreciate it as well. Thank you.
Commissioner, okay. Always a pleasure. Thank you. Can you, the website quickly? We have about 15 seconds. Your website?
Yeah, it's ct.gov/DCP, as in Department of Consumer Protection.
Okay, ct.gov/DCP. Very easy to remember.
Boy, you got a good memory.
How about that?
Thank you again. We'll see you next
week. Thanks, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Okay, coming up to 9 o'clock in the morning, my friends, and we will be right back. Stay with us. More to come.
I'm Jennifer.